Welcome to Radio Dolby 89.6 FM.
Welcome back, everyone. Welcome to the new show. Check it out.
And how are you this evening, Brother Dolby? All good?
Yeah, man. I'm feeling good. Ready for the new one. How about you?
Well, actually, recently I've been thinking. Thinking a lot.
Don't overthink it, man. Don't stress it. What are you thinking about?
I just thought, I had this idea that, like, maybe the problem with our radio station...
There's
lots of problems with it, but the main problem is we don't have nice slogans or mottos or memes or whatever you call it these days. So I've been thinking lots about, we need a slogan. Radio Dolby, 89.6 FM. Something, you know?
Didn't you come up with a few the other week there? We were speaking about this. So what have you got for?
So, I've come up with a few. I spent a good couple of minutes thinking about these. Okay, here we go. Radio Dolby 89.6 FM, bringing you the best and newest music that you may not have heard. That's us.
Yeah, that's us. That's good. Good thinking.
Okay. Radio Dolby 89.6 FM. More than you'd expect.
Well, that's good. But I like it as well. It's alright.
What about this one? Absolutely, negatively Dolby. Okay, so this week is quite special. It's cold, it's winter, so we didn't really go out to the streets, and instead we stayed in the studio and we had none other than Vaughn come and visit. And if you haven't listened to the music of Vaughn,
he's a genius.
Matt, you're in for a huge surprise. This guy has been outstanding from the day I can remember. He just produced just beautiful, clever, funny, amazing music.
Yeah, he's awesome. He's real, real good. If you're listening, check out his YouTube, Vaughnography, and it has a few of his tracks on there, some real good stuff. Can't wait, Dylan, actually.
He's here, and I'm so excited.
Oh, come on. Oh, we're great. I'm getting sweaty pants here.
Tell you this. I could sell my soul if you want to buy it. I'll accept a good mint price on it. I could do you a deal, but I've already had that leveraged on credit to someone else. Can you go deeper than a soul? Come on, what's deeper than a soul? We don't sell souls, we sell socks. Dolby City socks, the best socks in Dolby City. Never forget that, cause you wear your soul on your feet every time you hit the street and feel the beat. And man, you know what it's like. You gotta get yourself a good pair of socks.
People always tell you that you're too smart for your own good, but every time you've ever fucked up, it's cause you did something dumb. Maybe what people really mean is that you're not as smart as you should be. Maybe people ought to keep their reckons to themselves. And I'm not dumb. At least I think I'm not dumb. People say that years from now, people won't remember what you said, but they'll remember how it made them feel.
That's dumb.
Cause people have feelings all the time, but I can tell you this right now, it matters what you say. Cause there are things in the world that exist describe them. And if the thing and the word do not match, that's how we know that somebody is lying. And if I was dumb, well, I wouldn't think I was dumb.
Vaughan called The Unbearable Dumbness of Being, and I am truly honoured to have the man himself right here in the studio. This guy is a New Zealand national treasure. His music is smart, sophisticated, funny, and simply brilliant. It has truly been a long wait, and I'm so happy to have him in the studio with me. My first question, Vaughan, is when you were born, your parents, they must have consulted the stars. Vaughan is such a rock star name. Can you fill us in a little bit about that?
Yeah, that's a great question, because it lets me talk about myself and spelling at more length than anyone is interested in. My father was named Trevor, and he was traumatised by Fred Gagg, John Clark's comedy character, who was surrounded by a bunch of Trevs. So Trevor swore when he had his two sons that they would have one-syllable names, so that they could not be shortened or mocked. He named my older brother Bruce. So Bruce was subjected to, there was a Toyota ad in the 80s where this Australian character would go, Brucey, at the camera in a really annoying fashion. So Bruce got that all through the 80s. And then in the late 90s, early 2000s, there was that band that wrote that song called Who Would Call a Kid Bruce Anyway? Yeah, Shot Trev. And I was named Vaughan, V-A-U-G-H-A-N. That was pretty much always spelt wrong. To people, I related most strongly to the people who wrote V-A-U-N, because at least that's how it sounded. But there was a lot of V-A-U-G-H-Ns out there, so I would get misspelled that way. People who don't speak English as a first language, like, it's not easy for them to say. And so they'll ask you to spell it, and then you're like V-A-U, and they're following, and they're like, gee, this is not helping anybody. So, yeah, and Americans did this kind of Vaughan thing that, like, drove me wild even as a child. So I think I sort of settled on V-O-R-N because it was short. You could relate to the pronunciation pretty much instantly. And Americans would get the vowel right. I mean, they're still going to say an R, Vaughan, but it's less offensive to me than a Vaughan. Yeah, so I probably started experimenting with it, like drugs, you know, renaming myself. in my early teens, like settled, you know, settled when I was about 15. I stopped writing anything else, except on official forms or whatever. And so roughly through my professional life, there's been two Vaughns, you know, the one with the G's and the H's, goes and does work for money and appears at hospital appointments and applies for passports and those kinds of things, and V-O-R-N, drinks all the time and plays the accordion in school. I recommend having two names.
V-O-R-N sounds like a perfect alter ego. How long have you been recording music for?
The very first recording I was ever involved with was actually 30 years ago when I was in high school. My high school band, who were called Taranaki, it was like Taranaki and Anarchy, play on words there. Anyway, I discovered that if you got your 1980s double cassette player and you dubbed, so say for example you recorded some drums, then you dubbed the drums onto another tape, you could play the bass in at the same time using the mic input on your 1980s tape recorder. So you could do these multi-track recordings where there was just like total decomposition on the track as it went along, like that pristine drum recording that you had from the start would be almost completely smothered in static and mess by the time you put like two guitar parts and a bass part and vocals on top and everything. We did an eight-track album that way. A friend, guy from the band just reached out to me on Facebook, sent me a picture of the cassette cover, which was hand-designed by one of the members. And we took it to like the local record shop in New Plymouth. And bless the guy, he put it on the shelves. I don't know if we ever sold a single copy, but I think he just thought it was hilarious, these four bogan teenagers walking in their Metallica t-shirts with this cassette tape, going like, "Hey bro, can you sell that album?" So that was my first recording. But when I'm trying to be cool, I usually answer with the 1999, that was when I released the first album under the name of Vaughn. That album was called Normal, Normal, Normal. And that was recorded on a 4-track I borrowed from a friend. So I had it for like 2 weeks. I had all the songs in my head ready to go. And so in between, I had a job as a cleaner and a job as a waiter. Did sort of work in the morning, have a bit of the morning off, and then I'd work at lunchtime and have a bit of the afternoon off, and then I'd work at night, and in between all of those, I recorded the first album in my lounge. Never really asked my flatmates how they felt about that. Sorry, flatmates.
I have this thing where every once in a while I have to listen to a Vaughn Music track, and when I do, there's a couple of tracks I have to listen to, and one of the tracks is Mental Health Issues in Newtown Part 2. It's so beautiful. It reminds me of my time in Wellington too. And the other song is My Songs and My Children. And I must admit, as a fellow white guy, it inspired me to have a go at trying a bit of rap. But anyway, tell me about those songs, and tell me about the new album that's coming out.
Yeah, both of those are really popular choices for favourite song of mine, actually. Mental Health Issues in Newtown, can't go past that one without shouting out to my friend Chris Howard. I used to play briefly in a band called The Sprouts with him, and they had an amazing song called Mental Health Issues in Newtown. And when I wrote my song of that title, I didn't have a title when I started, and I didn't have a title when I finished, and I thought they were kind of companion pieces in a weird way. He'd moved out of Newtown by then, and I'd moved in. And they were both kind of odes to the suburb in very different ways. Yeah, and I just hit him up. I was like, "Can I steal your title? Can I call the song Part 2? And he was like, "Oh yeah, I guess it's like like a movie franchise and you get a new director for the second one. Yes, it was really cool of him to let me pinch his title. My songs are my children, that was a line from The Simpsons. The Red Hot Chili Peppers say it. Mo says to them, he doesn't like a line in one of their songs. It's like, what I got, you gotta get him, put it in you. It's like, you can't sing that in my bar. And they're like, our songs are our children, we're not changing them. Then the gag is that he suggests changing it to what I'd like, because I'd like to hug and kiss you. And they're like, oh, that's way better. Anyway, I'm pinched a Simpsons joke for the 35th time in my lyric writing. That one's, arguably a rap song. It's a song in which I'm talking over fun music, we can call it a rap. You asked about the new album. One of the things about the new album is that it has zero raps on it for the first time in ages. Don't know why, probably the circumstances of the recording of this one. We pretty much started on it around the time that I was getting diagnosed with terminal cancer, so I was pretty busy getting treatment, and also feeling bummed out a lot of the time, and scared, and so I guess a lot of the mood of the album is not conducive to good times. Not that rapping has to be about good times, but it's more fun to me, which is why I didn't end up doing any. So the new album's more of a rock album. Maybe another reason for that is that we've been working as a three-piece for quite a while, so it's like, it's just a lot easier to jam something out with like drums and bass and guitar and violin, and that's the kind of standard setup. So the kind of electronic-y thing tends to be more something I would work out on my laptop by myself at home, and then force the keyboard player to do, but we don't have a keyboard player at the moment. So it's ended up being a little bit more rocky. Death is a major theme because I've been dying while I've been making it. But yeah, that's more accidental than anything. I used to sort of notice a theme developing halfway through working on an album and then lean into it. I'm like, oh, that's the direction I'm going in. I can write three more songs along those lines or whatever. But this album was a bit different because I was just trying to do what I could in between. Yeah, in between various medical disasters and miracles. I mean, I was supposed to be dead 4 years ago, so certainly not complaining about managing to finish the album, but it's not. It's a bit more piecemeal in terms of the way it came together than some of the other ones. So I didn't really have the luxury of sitting down and knocking it out in the way I might have had with some of the older albums.
You've been through like so much over the last few years. How on earth did you manage to focus on your music?
Yeah, so I guess one accurate but slightly obtuse answer is I didn't really manage to focus on the music for quite a while. If you look at the stretch through the early 2000s, I was doing an album about every 2 years, and then the last two albums that I did were 3 years apart each. And then it will have been 6 years since the last album when we put this one out, so that shows a bit of a slowdown in the output. One of the things, when you're stressed out, going through tough times or whatever, is it's usually easier to do things for other people than for yourself. Gets you out of your own head, it's just the songwriter's curse. It's like, if you're only accountable to yourself, and yourself is feeling lazy today, you're not going to do the thing. Whereas if you're accountable to someone else, you will actually sit down and do the thing. So, so it was slow. The other thing I have to acknowledge is that for someone with terminal cancer, I've had a miracle run. I mean, it's not like I was in constant pain the whole time. I was on immunotherapy for about 2 years, 20 rounds of immunotherapy, so that's it's not pleasant, and you feel beat up. there are various exciting side effects, but it's not sore. So you can do stuff. Yeah, I think the thing that sort of slowed me down the most was because there was no guarantee I was going to live. I mean, the diagnosis without meds was 6 months. The diagnosis with meds is, we don't know. We know a fellow who lived for 5 years. Maybe that'll be you as well. yeah, so, you know, any time I sat down to try and record something, it's like, so this is going to be the last album, so it better be good. And, you know, you'd write half a song and you're like, well, this isn't the best song ever written, you know, and it's my last go at it, so fuck this song, throwing all my toys out of the pram. And like, yeah, I was doing that for quite a while, and then I had a couple of songs that I'd actually managed to finish. I didn't like them, I was stupid. But I remember going to a band practice and sort of just saying to the boys, like, look, here's the thing, I've been trying to write good songs and I don't think I can. So this album's gonna be just dumb songs. sorry, we're gonna do an album of dumb songs and then I'm gonna die. And you know, I mean, bless them, they were just like, Vaughn, if we wanted to do good songs we wouldn't be in your band, so you know, let's do some dumb songs. Yeah, and then it's like, you know, after a while you're like, it's not that dumb, you know, it's like the pressure of, yeah, pressure of trying to write something good will definitely just destroy your chances of writing something full stop. And so, I mean, it's a cliche, and it's something I learn every single album all over again, but it was just I guess it's the same process with Buenos cancer anxiety, yay. But yeah, during that time, I mean, we kept plenty busy. We did a live show in Wellington that we videoed, and so we managed finally to edit down all of those live videos, and you know, it amounts to what would have been a concert DVD back in the days when DVDs existed. Yeah, we did a bit of touring, played a few gigs around the various lockdowns and all that kind of stuff, and my other projects, Gold Medal Famous and Wellington Sea Shanty Society, and yeah, doing various things for mates, like, that was more the kind of stuff that I could just get my teeth into without, you know, without stressing. So there's your answer. I don't know. I bet you're glad you asked.
Of course I am. Hey, another funny question, actually, that song, The Unbearable Dumbness of Being, I'm going to quote you, I'll write that down here, you say, people say that years from now, people won't remember what you said, but they'll remember how it made them feel, and that's dumb, because people have feelings all the time, but I can tell you this, right now, it matters what you say, because there are things in the world that exist, and the words that we use to describe them. And if the thing and the word do not match, that's how we know that somebody is lying. Can you expand on that for me?
Yeah, so the first bit of that is a quote that's usually attributed to Maya Angelou. I don't actually know. I've put it in my song. I haven't bothered to Google whether that's true or not. Kind of doesn't matter for my purposes, because I feel like the quote is being terribly misused, and if it was Maya Angelou that wrote it, I think she would have meant something very different from the way that people use it. So normally, this whole thing, people won't remember what you said, but they'll remember how you made them feel. It's usually served up on some auntie's Facebook page with sort of pink flowers around it, and then the interpretation that they put on it is always that you should try and make people feel nice, and you shouldn't worry so much about who's right or wrong, as long as everybody feels okay. Maybe that is something Maya Angelou said, and maybe Maya Angelou, a woman who spent her life writing, words, like picking them carefully and writing them down. Maybe she was stoked that people won't remember what you said, but I can't help feeling like if I was her, I would be pissed off. I mean, she's someone who comes from that sort of civil rights era in the States, and like, you know, a lot of the people who struggle against various forms of oppression in society hit up against this thing where they're just like, you know, it's a plain fact that I'm a person and I should be treated the way a person is treated. And they get this like emotional knee-jerk response back from people. And if anything, I think that's what a Maya Angelou would be saying by that. It's like, it's not like people won't remember what you said, but they'll remember how you made them feel. So you should go out of your way to make them feel nice. It's like, no, they should listen to what you fucking said. Surely. You know, which, like, I don't think that's what your auntie means when she puts it up on Facebook. Anyway, this is the kind of thing that drives me wild, and then I put it into songs to try and make it drive me less wild. But as soon as I get talking about it, I get driven wild again. The rest of it is just, like, an attempt. You know, we're allegedly living in a post-truth world now, but I would argue that physical facts and the ability to predict physical facts is an excellent sort of first step in your measure of truths. I mean, like, yeah, various internet types will gladly stand before you and say that the truth doesn't matter. But it's like, you know, if you take a blunt object and hover it over their toe and say, like, I predict that when I drop this it will break your toe. You know, the truth's not that subjective. Like, hopefully. I don't know. Maybe it is. Anyway, yeah, those lines in the song are me saying I strongly assert that large amounts of truth aren't subjective. And if you disagree with me, turns out I'll break your toe.
Hey, look, I want to talk about another song. In fact, we're going to play it at the end of the interview. And it's called Ballad in G-sharp minor. And this is a two-part question. One, who writes a song in G-sharp minor? And two, the song's not really in G-sharp minor, is it?
So I'm going to rudely answer one of those questions, literally. Why would anybody want to write a song in G-sharp minor? One reason might be that they're into Greek traditional music. My friend Theo is one of the very few other accordion players I know, and a redonkulous musical genius. Was looking to borrow an accordion one time, and I was like, oh, well, you can have this one, it doesn't have all the buttons, but the only thing you won't be able to play in is G sharp, and who wants to play in G sharp? Angrily raised his hand. G sharp's my favourite. Yeah, so they're out there, man. Yeah, they're mostly doing incredibly difficult Balkan music, but they do exist. You have noted that the song is not in G-sharp minor, it's in D minor. So yeah, hold on. The song's a play on words that I'm not going to explain. The song's also about a terribly sad topic, and having a shit play on words as a title is a sort of questionable thing. I'm going to mount a weak defence of myself. You know, whenever people talk about terrible things happening in a casual way or a jokey way, or, you know, use an inappropriately light wordplay to introduce a topic or whatever, there's always someone there who's ready to be like, oh, do you think this is something to joke about? Or, you know, how can you be so casual about this or whatever? And the answer's like, I don't know, at least one of the answers is, that's what people are like. That's what people actually do in traumatic situations. Like, I worked on the trains for 9 years. There are a lot of, you know, if you are just on a large vehicle that weighs tons, moving, they do move up and down the tracks at various speeds. Like, you're going to hit stuff, and bad stuff's going to happen. And, you know, some of the old guys who worked there, you know, they'd seen some shit, And every single one of them had developed this kind of sort of dry humor about it. I can remember being on a train that hit someone, and when I got back into the staff room and I was trying to make myself a cup of tea, and my hand was just shaking uncontrollably. I wasn't really safe to hold the cup underneath the zip as the boiling water came out. This old guy was watching me and was like, what's wrong with you? And I was like, oh, I was on that train that hit someone. I'm not having the best day. And he said, you're having a better day than he's having. I don't know, you know, some people cope that way. I don't even know if I am one anymore. It's just like it's a thing that keeps coming back in the songwriting. As much as anything else, it's sometimes just a wedge to open the door a crack so you can get in to talk about the thing. You can't... some people, Leonard Cohen's of this world, have the talent for just starting heavy, but you know, if you've ever tried it as a songwriter, it's not easy. And even Len himself had plenty of wisecracks, you know. So I think it's a songwriting thing. You don't have to like it. It's okay. Hope you like the song anyway.
Hey, if someone wants to explore the vast Warren discography, where would you recommend they go to start?
Okay, so places to find me on the internet. If you would like to shout at me on social media, we're on Facebook as Vaughn Music. Vaughn is spelled V-O-R-N. But Facebook, Vaughn Music, you should find us. We're on YouTube as Vaughnography, youtube.com/Vaughnography. You can find us on Spotify. I think all the albums are up on Spotify now. If you just search Vaughn, you'll find us and one other bunch of weirdos from, I think, Austria. But it's pretty clear which is which. And Bandcamp, we're in the middle of trying to scrub up our Bandcamp presence. But it exists. If you search on Bandcamp for Vaughn, you can also search for Power Tool Records, which is our music label operating out of a warehouse in Auckland since time immemorial. So if you search for Power Tool Records and Vaughn, you should find most of our stuff.
Vaughn, you are truly an incredible, amazing human being. I've been really blown away listening to your story this evening, and I'm lost for words, to be honest. So thanks for coming in and joining us here in Dolby City on the show, and hopefully we'll talk soon.
Thanks for having me on. You always hope when you write songs that someone will be interested in listening to them, so it's a real pleasure to have a chat with someone who has listened to the songs and finds them interesting. It's great. Thanks very much.
Don't send me down in that hole.
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 I may be a big man, but nobody is too big to cry. I'm begging you, don't send me down in that dark hole to die. A Beamer, yes, the boss drives an Audi, yes, the boss drives me clean up the wall, and I guess it's a good thing that he's such a great driver, cause he's otherwise good for fuck. Don't send me down in that hole. Dark hole to die. Oh, the minister says that the minister cares, while the minister swipes at his phone, and we're all
look into. But no one's looking down into this. Don't send me down in that hole.
Don't send me down in that hole.
Don't send me down in that hole.
Don't send me down.
I may be a big man, but nobody's too big to cry. I'm begging you, don't send me down in that dark hole. To drone that the cops bravely remote controlled, but it died in the dark and it sputtered and sparked, pleading,
don't leave me down in the, don't leave me down in the, don't leave me down in this,
don't send me down in that hole.
Dolby Square, get all your fixes and mixes with Dolby Radio.
Seriously, have you been thinking about your life? Are you the slightest bit worried? You know, do you feel out of step with who you really are? Does it feel like it's just not right there? Yeah, well, I can help you out with that. I'm the Dolby Guru. The Dolby Guru. Look me up, you can find me here.
Dude, what a show. Far out, man. Best beat so far, I reckon. What an interview.
Yeah, I know. We need to... Gosh, we need to... find out who the drummer is. Find out who the drummer is. Find out the drummer is.
Check.
What do you think, brother Dolby?
We need to find out who the drummer is, who lays up all the beats and shit, who's making all these beats and makes them fizzle with some popping shit. Drummers aren't shit, can't keep playing for shit. That's why I use a sampler, as I know I am fucking with. Every time I make a beat, Dolby makes it nice and sweet. Keep it at 120, that's my favorite type of Dolby beat. Keep it hot, keep it fresh, Dolby brothers are the best. Keep it cool and keep it fun, I'm pleased you have the drummer song.
I was actually talking about Nick Brown on drums. And of course, there's Tom at Liggett on violin.
Yo, 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 Dolby. What you got to say?
But actually, now we're talking about it, your beats are pretty fine, brother Dolby. I've got to say that you're on form tonight.
Get ready for the breakdown.
Okay, so thank you for listening to another episode of Radio Dolby 89.6 FM. Hope you enjoyed the show as much as we did.
Again, if you get a chance to check out Phonography, got to shout that again. Amazing stuff in porn. Thanks for coming on, my man. Nice one.
Man with the Jimmy of Dolby.
At this point, I'm just showing off brother Dolby.
Mm-hmm.
Best in Amani goes.
By far the best in Amani rubber Dolby. You go for it.
I love that, man.
Well, hopefully you'll join us next week. Planning on interviewing Oliver from Glass Shards, who's an amazing electronic artist. Alright, end of the show. Song of the week is called If He's Not Dumb. It's like a mashup of the Dolby Brothers and Vaughn. I hope you enjoy it, and I hope we see you next week. Who knows? Good night. I do it on purpose, I do it on accident, you know.